This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Venezuela is in the news again. Three people, including a Venezuelan soldier and a teenager, were reportedly killed in clashes during street protests in Caracas and other cities. GM has announced it will leave Venezuela, saying that the government had seized its assets. Ordinary Venezuelans are struggling to have access to food and other basic supplies. Meanwhile, President Nicolas Maduro, who succeeded the influential Hugo Chavez after Chavez's death, said his government has defeated yet another coup attempt from the right. In a rally in Caracas, Maduro said right-wing forces, quote, once again took to the streets to break laws, to burn things, to stir violence, end of quote. Joining us to help put a context on what's really going on in Venezuela is Miguel Tinker Salas. He's a professor of Latin American history and Chicano-Chicana Latino-Latina studies at Pomona College in Claremont, California. Welcome to the program, Miguel.
Thank you very much.
So first, let's talk about what the facts are before we try to interpret them. Reading the U.S. media can give a very distorted image of what's happening in Venezuela. The fact is that Venezuela's economy is very much in trouble, right? And that's something that the right is, in a way, taking advantage of.
The economy is a central factor, but there's also the political backdrop. Much of this goes back to the election in 2015 in December of the National Assembly, in which the opposition won the majority. So that your listeners may know that as a result of that, and as a result of the Supreme Court ruling in early 2016, several of those assembly people who were elected faced irregularities and needed to be rerun, and the opposition's insistence that it would seat them put the National Assembly and the Supreme Court into contention with each other. And recently, the Supreme Court ruled that the National Assembly had lost its right to legislate because they had never resolved this issue. That was since revoked. And then, in addition to that, tribunals also indicated that Mr. Capriles, who's one of the leading opposition leaders, could not run for elections because he had received foreign funds. So that, added to the economic crisis, became the stimulus for these protests on April 19th, which is a historic day in Venezuela. It marks the beginning of Venezuelan independence in 1810, when the Caracas Cabildo Town Council demanded independence from Spain. So those are the factors that propelled and that the opposition tried to utilize, claiming that they wanted a new independence on April 19th.
So the current situation with GM saying that it was leaving Venezuela, and it's been there for many, many years because its assets were seized. Can you put that into context? Because the government has nationalized some industries and some companies. There are a lot of transnational and U.S. companies that have manufacturing plants in Venezuela because it used to be a very favorable environment. Is the Maduro government now continuing what the Chavez government had been doing in terms of consolidating national control of the economy?
Well, there is much more to this story. There has been a labor dispute at the General Motors plant for much of 2016. The workers were protesting, including last November, saying that the company did not want to produce cars, that all it wanted to produce was parts. Ford had already closed its factory in December of 2016. And in fact, only 8 cars get produced about a day in Venezuela. So the numbers are very, very small. So that the fact is that GM, for them, it was the fact that the government took over the plant in the context of this labor contention is really a way for them to say that they're closing their plant and moving out, because there really wasn't much production happening and there wasn't been much sales of cars. The government provides much of the subsidized funding for the companies to do to purchase goods abroad. Much of that had not been coming in, so it served as a context in which GM basically pulled out. But again, Kimberly-Clark had pulled out last year as well. Clorox had done so also. Bridgestone Tires had also, citing the economic conditions and the drop in the market in Venezuela.
Now, there were some assertions by GM workers that the company was forcing them to slow down production on purpose. Have you heard of that?
Sure. That was part of the dispute going back to late last year when the workers took over the plant in November. And then there were negotiations for severance pay because not all the workers were being employed. So I guess it's in that context that the government and the GM conflict takes place as a result of lower production in Venezuela and as a result of the fact that most of the production had been in terms of parts.
So when the U.S. media and even these companies in their press releases claim that the government is seizing their assets, forcing them out of the country, that's not the whole story.
No, the story has to do with the lack of purchasing power that many Venezuelans now face. I mean, the reality is that when you have about 700% inflation, it's very difficult for the market to sustain itself and for people to be able to purchase goods and services. What people are doing now is trying to purchase basic necessities such as food, clothing, and other such items. So again, there is a tremendous drop in the market. But you're right in terms of the representation of what happens is that, well, GM is leaving, but they don't tell you that the reality is that only 8 cars are being produced in the country. Much of the parts are being produced and cars are also brought in from other regions, or they're also retooled the way they are in other countries of the third world. So that's what gives the context. So GM is presented as it's leaving, the economy is failing, without addressing the context in which that happens.
Now, the big weakness of the Maduro government and even the Chavez government before it has been an over-reliance on fossil fuels. I mean, Venezuela has had a huge pot of natural resources, fossil fuel resources, that has helped to give the government its economic base and power. But with oil prices falling and the government so reliant on oil, has that really hurt the case of the government and even its socialist agenda?
It has, and that can be traced historically in Venezuela. It is really a structural question. The fact that Venezuela relies for upwards of 90% of its foreign reserves on oil, and the fact that very little is being produced in the country, so that there's a very close relationship between this dependence on oil. Now, what the Chavez government did was expand the material base of which oil profits were reaching by launching a series of social missions in terms of health, education, housing, identity, culture, society, et cetera, but it continued to rely on oil. And that was a lost opportunity because in many ways, governments before Chavez, and I'm sure governments after Chavez, will continue to talk about the need to sow oil's profits into non-oil industries, but it simply hasn't happened. And instead, you created expectations that change could happen by continuing to rely on oil. And in fact, that has not been the case. Let's make it clear, there has been a dramatic increase in benefits for marginalized sectors of society. But some of those gains are being lost today precisely because the government no longer has the funds with which to sustain it. So we're seeing poverty rates go back up again. We're seeing failures in terms of some of the social missions. And that's the larger problem. And within that context, the larger problem is that neither the government or the opposition have a very clear-cut answer to how to resolve this issue, how to grapple with this issue. And that's why I insist that what the country needs is dialogue. It needs a context in which it can grapple with these issues as a nation and begin to recognize that both sides exist, recognize that the only way out of this crisis is through dialogue and negotiations in which the very important issues the country faces, whether they be oil dependence, whether they be inflation, whether they be high rates of crime and corruption, can really be addressed on a national level.
So the solutions that the right-wing opposition offers, are they simply business as usual, pre-Bolivarian revolution, a neoliberal trade, a freedom for investors to come in, no tariffs and taxes, et cetera? Is that what they think will improve the economy? Which, of course, for them, it might.
Well, the fact remains that there is many different voices in the opposition. So we don't get a clear cut position. They're all united in wanting to replace Maduro, before that Chavez. But we don't hear clearly what they want to do. When Capriles ran against Chavez in the last election, he offered himself as a Chavez light, that he would continue the social missions, that he would continue to help the people who've been marginalized. Other leaders are very much neoliberal, particularly in the context of some of the more recent parties that have been formed. Other parties there but also have followed more of the client-patron relationships that have been existing in Venezuela previous to the Chavez era. So we don't have a clear perspective on the opposition. If their plan is to return to pre-1998, that is pre-Chavez, they will not gain support. And that's part of the problem that they confront when they come out. They have the ability to mobilize segments of the population who are discontent, but they don't have an ability to win over people who have in the past benefited from the Chavez reforms, because they don't have a program. They don't have a project. When they did have the coup in 2002, we saw clearly a return to neoliberalism, privatization, floating the currency, and that lasted only 48 hours. As you know, the coup was reverted. We've seen also their program in 2012, which also had highly neoliberal structures, structural adjustment policies. But again, that's not a program that's going to win over the majority of Venezuelans, and therein lies their challenge. They don't have a concrete proposal about how to go forward as an alternative to what exists today.
What do you make of Maduro's claims that yet another coup attempt was thwarted?
Well, I think that what the aim of the protests of this past week has been to destabilize the country. In many ways, they have the right to protest. Protest is legitimate, is good, but also you have to have cooler heads. The opposition has to recognize that there exist people who support the government. The government has to recognize that the opposition also exists and needs to be part of a dialogue. That has to be the fundamental beginning of this. If the idea is simply violence in the streets and destabilization, and somehow we're going to do what they did in 2014 to destabilize society and therefore the government will topple, that can't be their end game. That's undemocratic. It won't function. And it simply casts Venezuela into a spiral of violence that will be destructive for the country. So it's essential that both sides sit down, negotiate, and find a democratic solution to this crisis. That means that there has to be elections scheduled. The government has been dragging its feet on scheduling regional elections, which are due this year for governors and for mayors. Those must be scheduled, and there must also be an electoral calendar, because in 2018, there'll be presidential elections as well.
Do the protests seem provocative? Because if they go as hard as they can in the streets after government forces, and there is a government response, it makes the Maduro government look terrible. And the Maduro government seems to, at least on the surface from here in the United States, be holding back. I mean, you don't see the same kinds of reactions that you see in places that really are dictatorships, although the right is referring to Maduro as a dictator. So what do you make of the kind of dynamic that the right wing seems to be trying to provoke from the government? And what do you make of the government's response to that?
The opposition wants to have it both ways. They want to claim that they have peaceful demonstrations, but at these demonstrations, people are carrying Molotov cocktails. They are carrying missile devices, which are thrown at the military, trying to provoke a reaction. And unfortunately, the U.S. press here reports on these activities as peaceful protests and turn a blind eye to the fact that they are employing violence. It's reminiscent of Reagan referring to Nicaragua and Contras as freedom fighters. And in this context, we see the use of violence. And the opposition has to condemn the violence in all its fashions, in all its ways. And the government has to restrain itself. It has to allow peaceful protest. But at the same time, it has to maintain order. Therein lies the contradiction. But again, I think the fundamental issue is that street protests alone are not going to resolve the issues that Venezuela face. There has to be a context in which dialogue can take place and in which there's an effort at trying to resolve these issues with concrete programs, concrete solutions, and concrete proposals, and not simply violence in the streets.
What is the ripple effect that Venezuela's instability is having in Latin America, more broadly speaking? I mean, we've had, after a decade or so of leftward trends in Latin America, a turning of the tide with a few exceptions. And Venezuela had been considered, particularly under Chavez, a central stronghold, even sort of a symbolic symbol of strength of the Latin American left. Does this instability within Venezuela kind of weaken the leftward trend in Latin America as a whole?
I think that no doubt it feeds a narrative that the left is collapsing in Latin America. But let's be clear, the right doesn't have a solution to the problems in Latin America. And the reality is that we're talking about the countries that are criticizing Venezuela. Brazil, which had an illegal impeachment of a democratically elected president, Dilma Rousseff, by a government of Temer, who assumes the presidency and his cabinet is corrupt. The individuals who led the impeachment have been arrested. Mexico, who's been leading the charge against Venezuela in the OAS, a country that has a tremendous record of human rights violations, in which mass graves are found in Mexico on a regular basis, in which you have over 150,000 people who have been killed, 30,000 disappeared. These are the countries that are trying to create the narrative that Venezuela is a dystopic country, a Mad Max, a country on the verge of the precipice. And I think that Venezuela is facing serious problems, and those are the problems of a country that has has a dependence on a mono export product, which in this case is fossil fuels, and it highlights the dependence that many countries in Latin America have. It also highlights the challenges that they face in trying to provide for a population that is expanding dramatically, now almost 35 million people in Venezuela, at the same time trying to reconcile those differences. But I think that what the opposition would like to do, and what the right-wing governments in the region would like to do, is that create the narrative that Venezuela is an example of what happens when the left assumes power in the region, without talking about the reality we see in the other countries such as Mexico, etc. I think that in the context of Venezuela, you're also going to find that people continue to support the reforms that they benefited from, but they cannot support a government in this context that is unable to provide for basic necessities.
Now, Miguel, our current U.S. Secretary of State, until recently, was CEO of the largest oil company in the world, Rex Tillerson. And Tillerson has put out a statement warning Venezuela against, quote, silencing its opposition. What interests under the Trump administration and with the oversight of Rex Tillerson, what are U.S. interests in Venezuela? What do you expect to happen between U.S. and Venezuela in the coming months?
Well, Venezuela obviously has represented a strategic country for the U.S. Before the election of Hugo Chavez, Venezuela was portrayed as the model democracy that the U.S. promoted in Latin America up until around 1989, before there was the social explosion of the Caracaso in February of 1989. But the country was promoted as a model democracy. After the election of Hugo Chavez, it passed to become the nemesis of the U.S. in the region, an example for other countries to follow, and the policy was to inoculate Latin America from Venezuela so that the contagion would not spread. I think in many ways, it continues to be a strategic country in terms of its natural resources, its proximity to the U.S., the impact it can have as it straddles between the Caribbean and South America. So I think Exxon and the U.S. continue to be very much interested in Venezuela. It has the largest deposits of crude oil in the world. They happen to be heavy crude, which means production costs are higher and environmental consequences are worse, but it continues to be a strategically important country, both politically, but also economically in terms of natural resources.
Now, finally, what sources of news can people trust on Venezuela? This is often a question that I ask anybody that I'm interviewing about Venezuela, because you just hear such a one-sided perspective in the U.S. media on what's really happening in Venezuela. And of course, the Spanish language media is much better on this. But is there any English language media that you feel is a good source to refer to on Venezuela?
I think that Venezuelan analysis presents an interesting perspective in that they can be found at venezuelanalysis.com. There are other sources if you speak Spanish, reading La Jornada, reading a series of papers, but people have to make their own interpretations and try to draw their own analysis. But again, the reality is that the mainstream media represented this last week as simply protests against the Maduro government, when in fact there were also tremendous protests in favor of the government. But again, we don't see those. Those are not represented. There is an intrinsic institutional bias in the reporting. So people have to look out for different sources, read The Guardian, read Venezuela Analysis. They're all not going to have perspectives, but people need to make their own interpretations and assessments based upon that information. And of course, turning to your station as well.
Miguel, it feels as though, especially the U.S. left that had long looked at the Chavez socialist revolution with favorable model for how a government can implement social democracy and really redistribute wealth. It seems as though watching the government not be able to respond fast enough or wisely enough, that we're watching something tragic unfold in Venezuela, that Maduro is missing an opportunity to salvage the Bolivarian revolution.
Well, I think all of us have criticism, not just of Maduro, but also of Chavez. I mean, many of the problems that Maduro faces were inherited from Chavez. The dependence on oil, the dependence on the structures of power that were created, the reliance on the military and others were evident during Chavez. People pointed them out, the hyper-presidentialism, the overemphasis on his leadership, the void that was created in the aftermath. I think that there's been a constant criticism, and the criticisms have increased because there's been missed opportunities. So I think that those are fair. I think that we can be supportive of a process of change while at the same time being very critical of the mistakes that we see, particularly in terms of lost opportunities regarding the dependence on crude products, the over-reliance on that, the inflation, the awkward and the irreconcilable currency exchange rates in Venezuela, the tremendous inflation rate, dealing with crime, dealing with corruption within the administration, within the government, which has a long record that Venezuela has always had a major problem with corruption in the state and within various institutions. And again, many of those issues you can be very critical of, while at the same time indicating what benefits you see in the process. But the reality is that in the U.S., the support for Venezuela, again, quoting Venezuela, has been somewhat tepid, as you indicate. And again, it seems to be a difference once a government assumes power and once there is a solidarity movement. So we saw in the case of Central America, once they were solidarity movements with people struggling against dictatorships. So there is a difference in how solidarity movements are constructed. But in the context of Venezuela, I think people can have a critical approach, at the same time understand the context in which it's happening.
Miguel, I always appreciate your nuanced analysis on these issues. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest is Miguel Tinker Salas. He's a professor of Latin American history and Chicano-Chicana Latino-Latina studies at Pomona College in Claremont, California. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.